news with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Franklin.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, but he beat me to it. So, yeah, do get that newsletter. Head over to our website where we cover stories, including this race for the 3rd Congressional District in Western and Central Wisconsin. Rebecca Cook is joining us. And we started by talking about economic issues, which also took us a bit into taxes and farming and things like that. And, of course, the competitive nature of the district. But I was really taken by, you know, something you said about being an advocate rather than necessarily going with what the, you know, the conventional wisdom says or the lobbyists say, and to bring essentially the voice of a real person there. And I know when I talked to you in an earlier interview, you described yourself as the working class candidate in the race.
Yeah, I think that's super true. I mean, so, I grew up working class. I'm still, like I said, running a small business and a nonprofit organization while I'm running a 19-county congressional campaign. And I think that that's rare. I think it's rare, you know, to have somebody that's not retired or is able to independently fund their campaign to be running for office. But I think if we want a Congress that's more reflective of what our country is, we need to make it easier for, you know, working class people to run for office. And, you know, I think, I've run a very, I think, localized campaign. We've done a 19-county district tour throughout the entire district, really working to, I think, connect with folks about issues that are most important to them, and not just leaders, but workers and community members throughout the third CD.
You said that people have talked about gas prices. The other thing that people like to cite is taxes. And certainly we've discussed at length here about the harm that was done by the Republican 2017 tax code overhaul. When you talk to people about tax policy and what would give, you know, middle class families more of a fair shake in the taxes that they pay for the services that we all need, what do you tell them?
That hasn't been something that's come up a ton in the conversations that I've had out on the trail. But in my perspective, you know, I think that we need to be taxing, more of the wealthy elite in our country, and that they're paying their fair share of taxes, that the burden isn't falling just on middle class Americans. I think, you know, they've been unfairly taxed in the past.
One of the things that certainly helped for a time was a temporary expansion of the child tax credit. So between that and certainly the barriers that families are facing trying to afford daycare, or that, you know, daycare providers are facing trying to find workers, you know, that will, you know, get a living wage. Are these things that are a priority in terms of what you're hearing and what you might do if elected to Congress?
Yeah, I think that that's something that folks, that they received a great benefit from in that time. The other things that I've heard from a childcare perspective in the district that I think have been very interesting, you know, I think our approach to having childcare policy that is not one size fits all. So I've had conversations like in Black River Falls, there's a group of women that are childcare providers that have formed a cooperative, all independent providers that are working to purchase a building to be able to, subsidize some of the cost of what they have been having to charge out of their at-home facilities, which is really interesting to me. I think for me, it's interesting to see what kind of solutions communities have come up with on their own, and then how I can be an advocate to getting federal funding to those or replicating those throughout the district. So for example, you know, with those folks in Black River Falls, it's not just the cost of childcare, but it's also just the accessibility. There are providers to begin with in some of our rural areas throughout the district. Another unique solution that I heard from the mayor of La Crosse was an idea that businesses, so, you know, you think about like Gunderson and some of the bigger employers in our district, they have their own childcare within their companies and corporations. And smaller and mid-sized businesses don't have access to having a childcare facility for their employees, right? And so I think, he had a great idea of having a cooperative where small businesses and mid-sized businesses are able to buy shares within a cooperative to do that. So I'm really interested too, and I think these nuanced ideas that have come and out of communities that are really solutions oriented, and thinking about how we can back that in a bigger way.
Let's turn to healthcare now, and we'll get to the Affordable Care Act in a second, but I want to start with abortion care and women's reproductive health rights, the repeal of Roe v. Wade, by a right-wing takeover of the U.S. Supreme Court. This is something that, I don't think any single election is necessarily going to address one way or the other, though this November might be a pretty good start on that. Talk about what you're hearing, what you think the impact will be this fall, and what steps you would want to see made if elected.
I think everyone that would agree that's a Democrat that's running for office this cycle, that we need to codify Roe v. Wade into federal law. This is something that we've got to be on offense here. And I think it doesn't start just with reproductive freedoms. I think that we're going to start seeing this infringe into other rights and other freedoms, like gay marriage, which is one of the things that I am really happy to see Senator Baldwin pushing forward, is the Respect for Marriage Act. Being on offense before something like that is brought through the Supreme Court, that's something that I would have voted for in the House. When it comes back to reproductive freedoms, I think that that decision is to be made with, your partner and your doctor. I don't want to be, as a congressperson, in your doctor's office, sitting with you while you're making those very personal decisions and personal choices. And I think that the far right is, in essence, calling for government mandated pregnancies. And I'm for, and, really believe that women and LGBTQ folks can make those decisions for themselves.
There has been a decade now spent with proponents of the Affordable Care Act essentially being on defense, as Republicans have tried time and time again to kill it. It's something Ron Johnson has promised he would try to do if he's elected to a third term. So that battle is never going to go away, even while at the same time the Affordable Care Act was not perfect. Any piece of legislation is a snapshot in time. What are your priorities in terms of addressing what we do about providing healthcare in a way that, frankly, no longer makes us look foolish compared to the rest of the developed world in terms of cost and in terms of outcome?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as a small business owner, I myself am on the exchange, and it doesn't cover very much. I have catastrophic health insurance, so I get it. I grew up on a dairy farm. We didn't have healthcare coverage. When my dad cut his fingers off on the farm, my grandpa drove him to the hospital versus getting an ambulance. So, I think that I really understand the cost of healthcare and what it's like to struggle to have it. And, the Affordable Care Act, as you mentioned, is not perfect. And so I think we need to work to making it work for everyday Americans. Some of the things that I'm a really big advocate for is, from a Medicare perspective, is expanding Medicare to cover vision, dental, and hearing, the very things that deteriorate as folks age. My parents will get their dental work done in Mexico because it's frankly cheaper for them to do there than it is in our own country. And I want to see our parents and grandparents age with dignity. Also, when it comes to big pharma and, negotiating, drug prices, that needs to happen through Medicare, so that our grandparents and parents are able to afford their medications. And so these are really pragmatic things that I think that we can get folks to come across the aisle to work for. I know there's a candidate in this race that is a staunch proponent of Medicare for all. I'm not going to promise something on this campaign that I can't deliver in 2 to 4 years, that I know in a gridlocked Congress is going to be difficult to do. So we got to work with what we have, because while we're waiting for a pure or perfect bill, people are really struggling to pay for their medical bills.
You really helped illustrate what some folks are going through in, again, choosing to go to other countries, or that we've had to talk about importing prescription drugs from other countries as a way to do something. Is that strikes me as, it's got to be one of the most nonpartisan issues that you hear about at fairgrounds and dinners and things like that is about something as basic as being able to negotiate Medicare, being able to negotiate with big pharmaceutical companies on drug prices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's something that I hear fairly consistently throughout the district, and it doesn't matter who I'm talking to. But I think the talking points are different on each side of the aisle about who's doing what, and I think it's about continuing to have those real conversations that drill down. One thing I've noticed in running for office is that politicians like to make sweeping generalizations. I think you'll probably hear from everybody running in this race, I want to increase access to affordable, quality healthcare. Great. I think most people would agree that's great, but how do we drill down into what that actually means and what kind of specific policy are you going to, you know, utilize and push forward to make that an actual reality? And I'll notice this on both sides of the aisle, that people don't really drill down and speak the language of everyday people to have those conversations, right? And so I'm really trying to do that. You know, if you check out my issues page on cookforwisconsin.com on my priorities page, I wrote that. I have DC consultants, but I think it's really important for constituents to hear in very plain language what it is that I plan to do, and very specifically.
Let's switch then to community safety and specifically gun safety. We're in a district represented by a moderate Democrat who has voted no on a couple of recent pieces of gun safety legislation. We have a state where there has long been discussion of, you know, the hunting culture and not wanting government to come take our guns, as ridiculous as that sounds, but it gets in the way of talking about, again, those common sense ideas that would keep our kids from getting killed in schools. We nearly had a mass shooting episode in Madison when the Highland Park, Illinois shooter drove up to Wisconsin for a time with his weaponry. What are the things that you're proposing? And as well, is there something in a tightly competitive district like this? Is there something that you say that, well, I'm going to go this far in terms of gun safety legislation, but I wouldn't go to this point? What are those discussions like for you?
Yeah, well, I think the time for thoughts and prayers is over. I think there's a lot of fear mongering that happens in these conversations as well. There is a heritage of hunting and gamesmanship in Western Wisconsin, but I don't think that AR-15s belong at deer camp. I think they belong on a battlefield. And I say that very openly and strongly. I'm a candidate that has a distinction by Moms Demand Action. You know, I've been at a labor union meeting where somebody raised their hand and said, are you going to take our guns? And I said, no, I'm not going to take your guns. I want everybody to be as responsible of a gun owner as you are. You know, and he said, well, you know, I feel like Democrats are just going to take our guns. And I said, that's not true. I said, did you get a background check when you got your firearm? And he said, I did. I said, do you think most folks should get a background check when they get a firearm? Well, yeah. So then I think we both agree on universal background checks.
We do. You know, we do, as does, right. You know, like 80% of the population. And so if you'll, you know, again, forgive the naughty word, but I'm going to say this a lot to our radio audience and on Facebook. Nobody's coming to take your damn guns. That it's just not what it is. Rebecca Cook is answering questions about that and a host of other issues. Another segment with her after this next break. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll be right back.